Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Love and Relationships Podcast, a hotline style show where people call in with questions about love, sex, dating, singleness, and marriage, and mental and emotional health. I'm Deborah Falada, and I'm so glad you're tuning into these candid, unscripted conversations where I answer your questions in short, bite-sized, practical answers. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a licensed professional counselor, relationship expert, and author of 6 books. I also run the popular relationship advice blog, truelovedates.com, reaching millions of people with the message that healthy people make healthy relationships. If you have a question that you want me to answer on the show, send it by voice memo to Deborah@truelovedates.com or submit it on my podcast page, truelovedates.com/love-and-relationships, and I'll do my best to get it answered on one of the episodes. So let's get started. So we're doing something a little different over the next few weeks called the Ask a Counselor series. As you know, I recently started the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, a team of Christian counselors who are offering one-on-one online sessions to meet with you and help you work through any personal or relationship issue you might be facing. It's an amazing team of counselors that I get the privilege of leading, and I wanted you to get to know them the way that I've been getting to know them. I've asked the counselors on my team to come and join me on the podcast over the next few weeks to help me answer your questions for this Ask the Counselor series, and I can't wait for you to get to know them. To book a session with one of our counselors, go to DeborahFalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing today. Today's question comes from Lindsay from Texas. Hey, Deborah and counselors. I hear a lot about attachment styles, and I'm curious how my attachment style might impact the way I do relationships. Also, is our attachment style something we can change? Thank you for your help and advice. This is such a good conversation and such an important topic. And so I'm excited to have one of the counselors from our team at the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, Melissa, joining me for this important conversation today about attachment and attachment styles. Melissa, it's so good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Deborah. I'm excited to be here.
So Melissa, tell us a little bit about you and some of the things that you're passionate about, and specifically what type of clients or topics you really like to focus on at the network.
Sure. So I am passionate about helping people, especially on their faith journey, who are struggling with their relationship with God. We see so many people right now leaving the church and deconstructing their faith. And I love helping people find the true Jesus in the midst of all of that. I also work with people who've endured trauma. I'm an attachment therapist, so trained in emotion-focused therapy, which is an attachment therapy. And I work with a lot of cross-cultural workers and missionaries overseas.
I love that. To summarize those 4 big picture themes, deconstruction and faith-based counseling. I mean, and I think that's so important. There's a lot of people right now who are wrestling through what's true, what's not, what are my past hurts, what's God, like just really wrestling through, pulling that apart and figuring out how to navigate that. Trauma is another big thing that you work with, just helping people navigate the wounds of their past. I love that you are so passionate about cross-cultural work. We do a lot of work with people overseas. And not only that, but people who live here in America that come from different cultures and countries. And there's definitely a different set of norms that come with each culture. And it's important to have a counselor who's culturally informed. And then what we're talking about today, one of my favorite subjects as well, this concept of attachment, what it is, why it matters, and how it impacts our life. So first of all, our caller today seems to have some insight. She at least knows there's such a thing as attachment styles. And we do hear that word thrown out a lot more lately. I do love, Melissa, that counselor lingo is kind of making its way into the world, right? But I don't love how often people misuse it or misinterpret it or don't translate it properly. And so that's kind of, it's great that so many people are starting to talk about these things. We just need to make sure we're talking about them in the right way. So with that in mind, let's start with this whole concept of attachment style. What on earth is that? For people who are listening and they're like, I've heard of it. I have no idea what you're talking about. What is attachment style?
Great question. Attachment seems to be a big buzzword right now. A lot of people are talking about it. And I think in order to talk about attachment, we actually have to go way back to the start of the world. We were created as humans to be in perfect attachment and connection relationship with God and one another. But because of the fall, because we live in a broken world, pure and whole attachment has been broken with people and with God. And so when we're talking about attachment, we're talking about relationship and how we relate to other people and how we relate to God. So that's something that's not talked about a ton in secular psychology is that our attachment style can actually impact our relationship with God. How we relate to one another impacts how we relate to God. So there are four different attachment styles that have been named. So backing way up in the history of psychology, John Bowlby was a man who began to explore attachment styles, and Mary Ainsworth elaborated on them. And the four different attachment styles are secure attachment, anxious ambivalent attachment, avoidant attachment, and disorganized attachment.
So there's four types: secure, anxious, ambivalent, avoidant, and disorganized. And for those of you who are listening, three of those go in one category, which is the insecure category. And one of them, the secure one, goes in the secure category. So you're either secure attachment or insecure. And if you're insecure, there's three types of attachment styles. So we could also put it this way. The functional healthy type is called a secure attachment. You have healthy, secure attachments, and we'll explain what that means. But then the unhealthy types are the insecure attachment, and those are the three types that we're going to dive into. So let's start with the anxious ambivalent. Anxious and ambivalent sound like different words. When I hear anxious attachment, when I hear ambivalent attachment. So tell me what those are and why they're lumped into the same category.
Great question. So anxious ambivalent attachment, the anxious part of it really does encapsulate the type. There's a lot of anxiety that comes with this attachment style because attachment comes from our early childhood relationships with our caregivers. And, you know, it's interesting because some people can come into the world and begin to have insecure attachment style, but move towards secure attachment style, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And other people can come into the world secure, but then because of trauma, end up in the insecure
space. Very good point.
But the anxious attachment basically means that your caregiver was there for you sometimes, and other times they weren't. And because of that, that creates an anxiety, a fear of abandonment. So when they're there for you, there's a sense of security, safety, connection. But then because of their own anxieties, stress, whatever's going on in the caregiver's life, they might not be able to be there for you other times. So there's that dynamic of ambivalence of, okay, is my caregiver going to be there for me? Are they not? And there's that question of, will I be cared for? Will I be abandoned? And abandonment is a big part of the anxious attachment style.
Yeah. So Another example is if you come from a family where maybe you were adopted, that could be something that leads to an anxious attachment style, where you are part of a family unit of some sort, maybe taken from that family unit, put into foster care, maybe taken from foster care, put into another family unit. There's a lot of change. You don't know what's coming up next. You don't know if you can feel secure in this relationship, or is it going to change? And so you start feeling anxious about your relationships and whether or not they're safe, whether or not they're going to be consistent, whether or not they're going to be secure.
Exactly. And for the anxious person, anxious attachment person, there is a fear of departure in relationship. So when there's separation from a loved one, a caregiver, that's when the anxiety really comes up in the person, because they're not sure, like you said, if their caregiver, if the person who's supporting them will return.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And start thinking, as you're hearing us describe these attachment styles in childhood, how they develop, what they look like, start thinking what we're going to talk about next, but start thinking through, how could this then affect me as an adult in adult relationships? If this is how I was raised, if these are the type of attachments and connections and relationships I had as a child. Our attachment style is essentially how we relate to others, how we relate to self, and even how we relate to God. So that's the anxious, ambivalent. It's like, I don't really know if this can be trusted. So I'm constantly feeling anxious. I'm constantly feeling like I have to do something. It reminds me of, you know, I've worked with little kids who, when the mom goes to another room, for example, they start feeling anxious, like, Mom, where are you? And they like follow them around the house, or they're opening the door to see, are they in the yard? And they start to feel really anxious about the mom not being there. With anxious attachment, we often feel like the burden of connection falls on us. If we don't do what we need to do to connect, that person's going to disappear. If we don't do what we need to do to keep the relationship alive, we don't know if that person's going to stay or not. So that's kind of the attachment, anxious attachment style. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Avoidant.
Yes. So the avoidant attachment style also is similar to the name of it. There's an avoidance when there's rupture in relationship. This person grew up thinking that their needs just wouldn't be met by their caregiver. The caregiver may have been cold or distant or pretty disconnected from their own emotions. So there's this feeling that nobody will ever be there for me, so I just need to go away and take care of myself. So in doing that, when there's conflict in relationship, when there's rupture or just challenges that come up, they tend to withdraw and pull back and disconnect from themselves and their own emotions, because they don't know how to deal with the emotions that come up for them.
Yeah. Other people have called this the shutdown attachment style or the withdrawn attachment style. But it's the idea of there's not room for my needs here. And not only that, it seems like my needs actually rock the boat. My needs distance me from people, because when I have needs, people around me aren't willing to meet them. So it's better not to have needs. It's better to kind of shove my needs aside. It's better to repress my emotions and just take care of myself.
Yes. And as I mentioned with the anxious attachment, there's the fear of departure in relationship. For the avoidant person, there's the fear of approach. They are also afraid of being overwhelmed by other people's needs. So that's where the withdrawal comes up. And actually, in
like, you take care of you, I'll take care of me, kind of thing.
Right. Yep. And we don't need to really overlap in many ways. And an example, and I know we'll talk a little bit about this too, and how it plays out in relationship, but often when you get a person who tends toward anxious attachment and a person who tends toward avoidant in a relationship with one another, the image that I use with the couples that I counsel is that the avoidant person is holding the door closed, and they might crack it open, but they're afraid of letting someone in. And the anxious person is banging on the door saying, let me in. I want to connect. I want to be able to figure out what's going on with you and share what's going on with me. But the person who's in the avoidant space is holding the door closed.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, let's move on to the last one, disorganized. What does that mean?
Yeah, so disorganized attachment came up through Mary Ainsworth. She developed that third category of insecure attachment style. And this tends to come from pretty extreme trauma and abuse, often at the hands of a caregiver. So an example of disorganized attachment, if your father was an alcoholic and would come home from the bar in a rage, and you knew at times he might beat you, the person with disorganized attachment, as a child, you know that you need connection. So they might come running across the house to run toward their dad to try to receive the embrace from him. But right when they get up to him, they turn and go the opposite direction because they recognize and remember, oh my gosh, my caregiver is somebody who actually harms me. So as humans, we need connection with other people. But for someone who's dealing with disorganized attachment, they know they need that, but they are also deeply afraid of it.
Yeah.
Because it's by their caregiver in some way.
Yeah. And another attribute of this style that I have heard as well is some people refer to this one as the shame-filled attachment style. And the reason being is that when you're in such a disorganized, traumatic situation, when you're the one that's being harmed or abused or hurt, oftentimes you have to figure out why is this happening. And so oftentimes the natural bent, our natural default, is to just blame ourselves. There must be something wrong with me. Instead of saying there's something wrong with my dad, you know, there must be something wrong with me that he's so distracted and I don't know whether or not he's safe one day to the next. There must be something wrong with me because they're abusing and hurting me. And oftentimes in that disorganization, we can start blaming ourselves for the disconnect, for the rift in the relationship. There must be something wrong with me. That's why they're not receiving me. Do you tend to see some of that shame cycle in people who have the disorganized attachment style?
Absolutely. Yes. Some of my clients who have been traumatized at the hands of their parents do have that kind of experience. And as I mentioned, the anxious person is afraid of departure. The avoidant is afraid of approach. The disorganized is afraid of both approach and departure because they know they need that connection. They feel like there's something wrong with them and they're the cause of the break in relationship. And they also know that relationship could be harmful. So there's that complication within themselves of not knowing whether to approach or pull away from people all the time.
Yeah. And almost in a way, when you're in that place, that space, you can't really trust your gut. It's like, is this relationship safe or not? I'm not sure. Like, am I over exaggerating or not? I'm not sure. Can this person be trusted? I don't really know. Like, you just question so much of who you are and what you believe. And it has a huge impact on the way that you do relationships. All of these have a huge impact on the way that we do relationships. And I think we grow up with attachment styles without even realizing it. And granted, there are secure attachments and people who feel healthy and whole and confident in their relationships. But I think if each of us were to really dig, we'll find at least a hint of one of these insecure attachment styles in our own lives. We'll find one of them, maybe two different types that kind of we're wrestling with. I think it's easy for us to say, well, I'm a Christian. I had Christian parents. And so I have a secure attachment style. It's not that simple because even Christian parents aren't perfect. You know, even me as a healthy Christian parent, I'm creating an attachment style, whether or not I realize it. And so the intentionality has to be there, but also the recognition that even if we have good Christian parents, that does not mean that we're not going to have attachment issues to wrestle through, because nobody is perfect. Everybody's flawed. And we're all kind of on a journey of healing. So let's touch real quick on a secure person. What does that look like to be secure? And then let's dive into how these three insecure attachment styles impact the way we do relationships.
Sure. So to go off of what you just said about parents as well, our parents can actually pass down their attachment style to us if they haven't healed some of their attachment wounds. So Kurt Thompson talks a lot about the fact that every person comes into the world looking for someone looking for them. In other words, we're looking for someone to reflect back to us who we are. And when our caregivers don't really know who they are, that impacts us and can impact our attachment style as well. But when it comes to secure attachment looks like being okay when there's rupture that happens in relationship, because rupture is inevitable given that we are humans. And when there's rupture, whether conflict or hurt or whatever it might be, when we are living out of a secure place, we can approach conflict in a healthy way. We're not avoiding as the avoidant person would. We're not people pleasing as a person who's in that anxious space would. And we're not yelling and raging and all of that, but we're able to approach conflict in a healthy way. We're also able to find within ourselves a sense of wholeness, because we are able to come to a place where we can help self-regulate when we are dysregulated, because often a person who's struggling with anxious attachment is trying to find others to help regulate them, which we need in some ways, but we also have to find that within ourselves. And the person who's dealing with the avoidant might pull back and withdraw and numb and dissociate and not actually deal with whatever emotions are coming up. So a secure person is able to process their emotions in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And find that sense of wholeness.
I love that. Okay. So how then do these things play out in our relationship with people? Let's start there. And then I also want to kind of piggyback on some of that, of how some of this might also impact our relationship with God. Let's start with the anxious attached person. What could that look like in relationships? I know we talked a little bit about with conflict, like they're the person that's banging on the door. Like, we need to fix this. We need to fix this. We need to deal with this right now. We cannot have a rupture because I can't handle it. So how can that play out in a negative way in the way we do relationships?
It can play out in a negative way because for somebody who's dealing with that anxious attachment style, they can't be at rest when there's rupture in relationship or conflict. And so they can overwhelm their partner. They could overwhelm a friend when they are banging on that door so heavily. They can also be dealing with their own relationship anxiety pretty intensely when they are spiraling in their anxiety when there's rupture in relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing too, I often see people who have the anxious attachment style tend to have a higher rate of one-sided relationships, because in their attempt at creating a relationship that lasts, don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me, they then end up doing most of the work. It's like, I can't rely on you to stay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put in all of the effort and all of the work in keeping this relationship alive, because I don't know if I can rely on you to keep the relationship alive. So I'm going to be the one to just pour in and invest and reach out and connect and do everything I can so that this relationship stays alive. But when you pull back and you actually look at it, you're giving so much and receiving so very little. because of your attachment style. You just are like, it's my job to keep this relationship alive. And if I don't do everything I can, it will die. That is such an unhealthy perspective. And not only that, it tends to draw like a magnet those one-sided relationships with people who aren't really giving much back. So not only on one hand can you come across as super codependent, super needy, over the top, overwhelming, but then the flip side of that is you can find yourself engaging in relationships where you're doing all the work and getting very little in return. And I also see that same mentality, Melissa, play out in some of our relationship with God. Like when we come from that anxious attachment style, we feel like we have to be the ones to do everything for Him. We have to be the ones to maintain the relationship, to obey, to serve, to give, to pray, to worship, to go to Bible study, to go to church. And if we don't do those things, God might not be close. He might feel distant. He might not be pleased with us. And so we're on this rat race of just doing, 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 doing until we're depleted. And then we're like, God, where are you? Why do I feel like you know what? Because I am just pouring out and pouring out and pouring out and getting nothing in return. The irony in that is we don't even allow Him to pour out over us. Just like in anxious attachment, you often aren't allowing somebody to pour out over you because you're too busy trying to keep them connected that all you're focusing on is how to make them stay. And so there's that unbalance in our relationship with God as well. Tell me, is there any other way that you see besides that one-sided thing, the anxious attachment playing out in how we view God?
Well, I agree with that idea of trying to do for God, because like I said, there can often be that people-pleasing response around the anxious attachment style. And I think this is maybe just my own theory, but people who struggle more with that anxious attachment style because they're so afraid of abandonment, they have difficulty receiving love.
Yeah.
So receiving God's unconditional love for them without having to do is a part of the growing edge for somebody dealing with the anxious style.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Okay, let's move on to the avoidant attachment style. How does that play out in relationships? And then how does it play out in our relationship with God?
So I often see with the avoidant person, when conflict or rupture happens, they withdraw, they pull back, they disconnect emotionally from themselves, from their partner, from their relationships. Because as we mentioned, they feel like nobody will ever be there for them and nobody will be able to fulfill their needs that they have. So they might have difficulty confronting when they've been hurt. They might have difficulty really trying to lean in when there's rupture. So back to that imagery, they hold the door cracked open because they know deep down that they need and want relationship, but the fear of being overwhelmed by another person is so great that they keep it only cracked open, and that leaves them feeling pretty empty and alone.
Yeah.
And I think
we can make excuses for ourselves when the door is cracked, not closed. At least it's not closed. It's cracked. I'm still in relationships. I still do give. But you have a hard time putting into words what you need. You have a hard time explaining and communicating the offense. When you're confronted, it's easier to be like, you know what? I don't want to talk about this. We're not going there, you know, rather than to go into the hard, difficult territory, rather than to walk into the relationship rift and work through it. It's easier just to be like, nope, I'm going to keep it at a distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for this person, recognizing that they won't be taken down by another person's needs or emotions, and that they can have boundaries in going into these conflicts and going into these spaces is really important, because their fear is that is the approach of somebody overwhelming them. And so to know that they can set their own boundaries, yeah, and they can go in when they're ready, and they can navigate it, and they can be careful to not take on another person's emotions. I think that can be helpful for them to be aware of.
Yeah, you can still protect yourself. Opening the door to relationships and being vulnerable doesn't mean a lack of safety and stability. You set the pace. You set the standard. You set the boundaries. That's what a healthy person does. A healthy person doesn't have a wall where they're like, everybody out. But they're also not completely free, like everybody just come in and out as you please. A healthy person has a fence where I can open the door wide for certain people, but then when there's an unhealthy situation, I can close the door. Like, I get to choose, rather than just living with the door cracked and hardly taking risks in vulnerability. I have the power to choose who I let in and who I don't let in. I have the ability to protect myself and keep myself safe. I have the ability to meet my needs, but I also have the power to ask for others to help me meet those needs and learn how to have that healthy balance of relying on one another out of, not out of need, but out of the desire for intimacy. Like, I don't need you to survive, but I'm choosing you to come into my life. I'm choosing you to be vulnerable with. I'm choosing you to see my weaknesses. I'm choosing you to trust with my needs. And I think that's kind of what takes them out of that unhealthy space. So how can then, what does that look like in our relationship with God when we're avoiders?
So for the avoidant person, the reality of needs is scary, because they had needs growing up and they learned to suppress them or disconnect from them because they knew or believed that their needs wouldn't be met. And so I think that that idea of needs plays out in our relationship with God, because there could be this fear of asking him for things because of fear of him not meeting their needs in different ways. And so, and if they're, is a rupture or something happens in their relationship with God, they might withdraw and pull back and believe similar, you know, but in a different way to the person with anxious attachment. They might believe also that God doesn't love them or want them. Whereas we have a God who wants to chase after us. I mean, we see it from start to finish in scripture. He is chasing after his people and longing for relationship with them. And so for the avoider to know that they have a God who wants them is really important.
And you know how this also plays out in our emotions? I think anxious attachment style, we tend to be dictated by our emotions. The emotional highs and lows are like the waves and we just go with them. Whereas the avoidant person tends to be completely numb to their emotions. Like, I'm not going to even allow myself to go on these waves, and I'm just going to separate myself. And sometimes those things play out in our relationship with God, the emotional highs and lows where we're trusting our feelings more than we trust God in the anxious attachment style. Whereas with the avoidant attachment style, it's like, I don't even really want to feel that much. It's just easier not to feel. It's easier just to be logical, apologetics, faith, belief, knowledge, just going to keep it up there so I don't have to feel anything and not have to get too vulnerable. And I think it even impacts the type of church we're drawn to, the type of church culture, denomination. Like, believe it or not, our anxious, avoidant, disorganized attachment style can actually have a much bigger impact on the way our faith plays out than people even realize. Okay, let's talk about disorganized. What can that look like in relationships? And then how can that play out in our walk with God?
So with the disorganized person, there can be multiple ways that plays out. a person struggling with this style could be super controlling in their relationship because of that fear of being hurt by the person that they love, or they could be more in a victim space or living out of that space of everything bad just happens to me all the time. And it's okay that I'm trampled on and abused by every person that I'm connected to. So it can feel pretty chaotic at times to be in relationship with this person. And there can be this because of the fear of both connection and departure in relationship.
Yeah. And I could see that playing out as a, I love you, I hate you type of interaction where one day I feel like I need you. The other day I'm like, wait, I don't even know if you're safe anymore. And so that disorganization plays out in inconsistency in how I do relationships from one day to the next, from one moment to the next. The other thing too that I tend to see with this type of attachment style is, again, either I hate you or I hate me. And then oftentimes when I hate me, it's that shame cycle of I'm such a bad person. I'm so awful. I can't believe I did this. How could anyone love me? How could God love me? You know, how could God want me? This is why I'm suffering. This is why I'm always the victim. God must not care about me. God must not love me. I must not be good enough. He must be disappointed with me. And so it's almost like this emotional roller coaster, which kind of makes sense when you come from that background of this trauma, these things that are so unexpected. There's no structure, there's no rhyme or reason. So then I'm also living in an unorganized, disorganized, chaotic kind of way. And I either blame it on God or blame it on me. But either way, someone gets the blame and the guilt. Somebody is going to go down for this. And it's just a really hard way to live. I would say a lot of negativity, a lot of cynicism, you know, a lot of hurt.
Yeah. And that idea of the person oscillating back and forth between controlling, yeah, which would be, I hate you, I'm going to push you away, I'm going to protect myself, and then swinging into the shame, victim, I'm the worst person in the world, nobody loves me space. It feels like for this person, there's some pretty, the pendulum is pretty extreme that they swing on a regular basis.
I think at the end of the day, the importance of understanding that just because we're Christians doesn't mean we're immune to these type of hurts. We were made for relationships. We were made for healthy attachment, but the enemy comes in and tries to destroy it in our most vulnerable moments and plant lies that then begin to develop into these unhealthy attachment styles. So I guess at the end of the day, the question that Lindsay posed is, can we change our attachment style? And what would your answer to that be, Melissa?
The great news is we can. So we are both wounded in relationship, and yet healing comes through the context of healthy relationship with God, self, and others. We have neuroplasticity in our brain, which means our brains can change. They're not fixed. They're not stuck, which is really hopeful. And we can heal our attachment styles through healing parts of our story, through working through our trauma, through being in healthy community with other people who love us, who see us, who are willing to ride the highs and lows of our attachment styles when they're playing out. And we can also tend to ourselves in order to heal our attachment style. There's a concept called reparenting that is more of a buzzword or a buzz concept these days, but we can reparent ourselves when we're struggling. So at times, even for myself, I'll ask myself, how old do I feel right now when I'm triggered by something that happens in relationship? And sometimes I'll feel really young and feel like I'm back in that child self. And I can walk myself through those moments by going, what do I need right now? what emotions am I feeling? What am I afraid of? What's coming up in me that is being triggered from my past that's not about the present moment? And when I see myself in those moments and give myself what I need, I can heal parts of my insecure attachment style.
Absolutely. And the beauty of what you're saying is it's through the power of the Holy Spirit that He gives us the ability to look back and say, okay, let's do the work together. Maybe you weren't able to understand this when you were little. Maybe you didn't have somebody walking alongside of you then. Now that you're an adult filled with the Spirit, let's go back and change some of that story. Shift your perspective and mindset. Give you power and hope and perspective where you needed it in your past and you didn't have it then, but you can have it now, and we can begin rewriting the way that you attach, rewriting the way that you believe, the things that you believe you deserve. And that's the beautiful news, guys. When you work with a good Christian counselor, it's not just about the buzzwords. It's about deep, meaningful healing with the help of the Holy Spirit. It's about God shining a light in some of those dark places and beginning to heal us from the inside out, beginning to heal us from the past so that we can be free in the present to do relationships in a healthy way. And like Melissa said, our attachment style is not something permanent. We're not bound to it. We can change and we can heal. But like she said earlier, just as we can move from healthy to unhealthy, we can move from unhealthy to healthy. So we have to be careful to realize that it's not just about, yes, I'm unhealthy and then I'm becoming healthy. We also have the capacity to go backwards if we're not careful. The wounds of relationships from today, the hurts that we experience, the times when we really are a victim and we really do have to face injustice. How do we allow that to impact our attachment style? How do we allow that to impact our security? How do we allow that to impact what we believe about God, self, and others? So this is just, it's such an important conversation. But I do believe that there is hope for healing. And this is why we do what we do at the Deborah Flata Counselors Network, to help people begin to understand some of these complexities and relationships, God's design for attachment, and how we can begin to do it better. Give me a couple final words of encouragement for somebody who's listening, who's like, I really need to heal. Like, I'm seeing this stuff and I feel stuck in it. What would you say to them to just leave them with some encouragement?
Healing is possible. The cool thing about being human is that we are wired to heal. You get a cut on your finger and it naturally heals. And so when you work through your story, when you figure out why you're being triggered in the present in relationships with others, healing happens. And it's not just recognizing what's going on, but also doing so in the context of safe relationship, whether it's with a counselor or with a friend or with a spouse. Healing happens when we are in the context of safe relationships. And so the hope is, as Deborah said too, we don't have to do this alone. We have the Holy Spirit. We have the Father, Son, and Spirit to walk alongside of us on the healing journey. Mm. And He brings us comfort. He brings us encouragement. He brings us people. And yeah, and their healing happens.
Amen. Healing happens. We were wired for healing. God made us to heal through the help of His Spirit. And like Melissa said, also through the help of good counselors. If you are looking to take the next step in your journey of healing, you guys, I really encourage you to get to know Melissa. You can learn more about her at deborahfilleta.com/Melissa, and you can book a session with her one-on-one to work through some of these attachment things, to talk through some of your relationship issues, to talk through your relationship with God and how you may have attached to Him some of the areas that you need healing in your life, whether it be from trauma or past hurts in your personal or relationship life. We're here to help you You don't have to do this journey alone. In Jesus' name and by his power and spirit, you were made to be healed, and we're believing that over you this coming year. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me and being a part of this important conversation.
Thanks for having me, Deborah.
Take care. People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you love what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about those as well as hundreds of articles and courses over at my blog, truelovedates.com or deborahfalada.com. I love connecting with you online. So find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Falada and tell me your story. If you have a question for me, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/love-and-relationships and we'll try to get it answered on the show. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so great being together today, and I can't wait to be with you again next week. See you later.